Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So we're going to read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. And it looks like this is where we're at, yeah? It is the volume titled Only He Could Lead Them, San Francisco to India, 1967. Chapter 1, Swami Invites the Hippies. January 16th, 1967. As the United Airlines jet descended on the San Francisco Bay Area, Srila Prabhupada turned to his disciple Ranshaw and said, "The buildings look like matchboxes. Just imagine how it looks from Krishna's viewpoint." Srila Prabhupada was 71 years old, and this had been his first air trip. Ranshaw, 19, and dressed in a suit and tie, was supposed to be Srila Prabhupada's secretary. He was a new disciple, but had raised some money and had asked to fly to San Francisco with Prabhupada. During the trip, Srila Prabhupada had spoken little. He had been chanting, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare." His right hand in his cloth bead bag, he had been fingering one bead after another as he chanted silently to himself. When the plane had first risen over New York City, he had looked out the window at the buildings growing smaller and smaller. Then the plane had entered the clouds, which to Prabhupada had appeared like an ocean in the sky. He had been bothered by pressure blocking his ears and had mentioned it. Otherwise, he hadn't said much, but had only chanted Krishna's names over and over. Now, as the plane began its descent, he continued to chant, his voice slightly audible, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." And he looked out the window at the vista of thousands of matchbox houses and streets stretched in chanted patterns in every direction. When the announcement for United Airlines Flight 21 from New York came over the public address system, the group of about 50 hippies gathered closer together in anticipation. For a moment, they appeared almost apprehensive, unsure of what to expect or what the Swami would be like. Roger Seagull: "We were quite an assorted lot, even for the San Francisco airport. Mukunda was wearing a Merlin the Magician robe with paisley squares all around. Sam was wearing a Moroccan sheep robe with a hood. He even smelled like a sheep. And I was wearing a sort of blue homemade Japanese samurai robe with small white dots. Long strips of beads were everywhere. Buckskins, boots, army fatigues. People wearing small round sunglasses. The whole phantasmagoria of San Francisco at its height. Only a few people in the crowd..." Well, that was unquote. "Only a few people in the crowd knew Swamiji. Mukunda and his wife Janaki, Ravindra Swarup, Roy Rahm, all from New York. And Allen Ginsberg was there. A few days before, Allen had been one of the leaders of the Human Bean in Golden Gate Park, where over 200,000 had come together, quote unquote, a gathering of the tribes for a joyful powwow and peace dance. Today, Allen was on hand to greet Swami Bhaktivedanta, whom he had met and chatted with several months before on New York's Lower East Side. Swamiji would be pleased, Mukunda reminded everyone, if they were all chanting Hare Krishna when he came through the gate. They were already familiar with the Hare Krishna mantra. They had heard about the Swamis chanting in the park in New York, or they had seen the article about Swamiji and the chanting in the local underground paper, The Oracle. Earlier today, they had gathered in Golden Gate Park, most of them responding to a flyer Mukunda had distributed, and had chanted there for more than an hour before coming to the airport in a caravan of cars. Now many of them, also in response to Mukunda's flyer, stood with incense and flowers in their hands. As the disembarking passengers entered the terminal gate and walked up the ramp, they looked in amazement at the reception party of flower-bearing chanters. The chanters, however, gazed past these ordinary, tired-looking travelers, searching for that special person who was supposed to be on the plane. Suddenly, strolling toward them was the Swami, golden complexion, dressed in bright saffron robes. Prabhupada had heard the chanting even before he had entered the terminal, and he had begun to smile. He was happy and surprised. Glancing over the faces, he recognized only a few. Yet here were 50 people receiving him and chanting Hare Krishna without his having said a word. Mukunda, we just had a look at Swamiji and then we bowed down. Myself, my wife, and the friends I had brought, Sam and Marjorie. And then all of the young men and women there followed suit and all bowed down to Swamiji, just feeling very confident that it was the right and proper thing to do. The crowd of hippies had formed a line on either side of a narrow passage through which Swamiji would walk. As he passed among his new admirers, dozens of hands stretched out to offer him flowers and incense. He smiled, collecting the offerings in his hands, while Ramchaw looked on. Allen Ginsberg stepped forward with a large bouquet of flowers, and Srila Prabhupada graciously accepted it. Then Prabhupada began offering the gifts back to all who reached out to receive them. He proceeded through the terminal, the crowd of young people walking beside him, chanting. So this is 1967, San Francisco. It is more or less the peak, or around the peak of the hippie era, which was, from any point of view, but particularly materially, it was really a very sort of astonishing phenomenon that huge percentage of the young people of America and then Europe and then the other parts of the Western world, Australia, New Zealand, and these types of places, they somehow or other got this idea of peace and love and things like this. In one sense, it was connected with the LSD phenomenon. Timothy Leary, what was his name? Alpert, somebody or other, Alpert. they were actually academics. They were PhDs, but somehow they got into experimenting with psychotropic drugs. And then, well, that's a long story, but they felt that their consciousness was improved by taking those drugs. And they felt they achieved greater sensitivity and a greater awareness, and a greater awareness of the good in life, they thought. And at least on a certain level, emotionally, and on a certain level, something happened like that. So it became a massive, massive, massive phenomenon. And I don't know if it was really the majority of the youth, but it wasn't the majority, it was very close to it. They just, a lot of them just gave up whatever they were doing. Gave up university, gave up working. As they said, the slogan was, turn on, tune in, drop out. And they became hippies, the term somehow, I don't know where it came from, but the term arose, hippies. And they began what became officially known as a counterculture. And in certain respects, it was this, as we mentioned, like peace and love and flowers and so on, type of culture, which of course, on the material level, there's something nice about it. There's something nice about it. And they really started criticizing very severely the materialistic way of life. Materialism in general, working and possessing things and being fashion conscious, being class conscious, and these types of things which are very much parts of ordinary materialistic life. And they were really, as we said, they really criticized and they really rejected the just that ordinary materialistic way of life of just working and getting a house and keeping up with the Joneses, with the neighbors, and all that sort of thing. Just being very run-of-the-mill, another faceless face in the crowd. So, and looking for alternatives, the main thing was taking the drugs because they felt that expands your awareness. And then just looking into different ideas, different ways to live. Communal living. So, by Krishna's arrangement, it was into this whole social environment that Srila Prabhupada arrived. He arrived in 1965 in New York. It was already booming. 65, 66, 67, 68, it was already decaying to some degree. About 65, it was already booming, the whole hippie culture. And Prabhupada walked right into the middle of it. When he landed in America, first he went to, what was the name of the place? Butler, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is just very near New York. It's the next state to New York. So Prabhupada went there, And there was a contact there, the son of a bridge busie. In other words, that son was a bridge busie himself by birth and upbringing. But he had ended up coming to America. He married an American girl and became just an American, even though he was born a bridge busie. But still, because of the family connection, when his father told him, there is a Swami who's an associate of mine coming to America, I want you to accommodate him. So the son agreed. Not that he was interested in Krishna consciousness or even Hinduism. He was just an American by now. Culturally, he was essentially an American. Prabhupada opened the fridge and it was full of meat and eggs and stuff. So that young bridge busie gentleman had become pretty much acculturated, is that the word? Yeah, absorbed into the American culture. And then there, staying there initially, Srila Prabhupada tried to preach in different ways. Yoga societies and what various types of things. Nothing much was happening. But then Srila Prabhupada somehow got the idea to go to New York and to preach to the youth, because San Francisco was actually the capital of the hippie revolution. But it had already spread all over, and it was in New York. And the center of the hippie area in New York was the Lower East Side of Manhattan. A certain part of New York, shall we say. And somehow or other, Prabhupada just got a place there. And before you knew it, the word got out. There is a Swami here from India. Wow. They were very much in a sort of wow consciousness due to the influence of drugs. It's just, you know, of those particular types of drugs, hallucinogenics. And Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada is, even from the Hindu point of view, an ultra-conservative Swami. Ultra-conservative. But somehow he moved into this hippie neighborhood, and the whole hippie society. And because they were looking for alternatives, because they were so dissatisfied with the regular materialistic way of life. So many of them, really many, became attracted to Srila Prabhupada and his message, at least to some degree. Yeah, because, you know, mantras, well, after a little while, oh no, it's already happened, I think, that some of the hippies were joining Prabhupada and becoming devotees, sort of, some were actually becoming devotees, sadhakas, practitioners of Krishna consciousness, step by step. Others were sort of quasi or semi-devotees or sort of marginal. But that someone that Prabhupada was publishing a version of Back to Godhead, and he had some of these young people write articles. And one of them wrote an article, Stay High Forever. Because they thought that when you take drugs, particularly these hallucinogenics, you get quote-unquote high in consciousness. But then you came down after some time. But now, here, through these mantras, because it's more authentically spiritual, you can stay high forever, which is true. Of course, their so-called high with those drugs is not really high. And as time went on, in fact, it's sort of approaching that time already, 67, 68, 69, that sort of time, the hallucinogenics, well, the mafia had infiltrated the hippie society selling drugs, and they started introducing narcotics, heroin, and things like that. And because they, you know, mafia, they're kind of counterculture in a sense, but in a different sense. And, you know, they want to make money. And from the hallucinogenics and marijuana, people don't, you can't make so much money. But with narcotics, people become addicted and you can make lots of money. So the whole hippie society, by sort of early 70s, it had fallen down. Not that it was ever up very high, but it had really become degraded. But it was an interesting arrangement of Krishna's that even though the hippie philosophy was severely confused, you know, just illicit sex is just great, you should do it, it's wonderful. Don't be hung up with moral considerations. That's all part of that materialistic, you know, the whole materialistic scene, which isn't really true. Yeah. So, you know, don't get married, don't have a stable sort of, so to speak, permanent relationship with a member of the opposite sex. Just, well, famous song from my youth. If you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. Oh yes, it was official. It was official. Yeah. So they were severely confused, but they had the sort of seed, at least, of being anti-material and looking for an alternative. Although what they thought was an alternative was not, at least certainly not a good alternative. But Prabhupada walked into that by Krishna's arrangement. And many of the hippies became attracted to Krishna consciousness, really many. It was a massive phenomenon, actually, the interest in Krishna consciousness and the young people becoming involved in Krishna consciousness. Massive phenomenon, incredible, based on these ideas that reject the ordinary materialistic way of life and try for some higher ideals, higher way of life. So it was Krishna's arrangement. If Prabhupada, when Prabhupada arrived in America in 1965, early 1966, the first 1 year, Srila Prabhupada struggled. He struggled to get established. He struggled just to stay in the country because he needed visas. And in those days, India was just like super third world country. And America, you know, the most opulent country pretty much, they're not very interested in having people from third world countries coming. So Prabhupada, first thing, he struggled just to be able to stay in the country. And he struggled to, for about a year, to really get something going. And Prabhupada said that during that first year, every month, I would go down to the docks, because he came in a boat, in a ship, and the deal was return trip. In those days, flying from America to India, not so common. Not so common. Not like today, where you just fly. It's extremely common. So, he had come by ship, and the deal was return ticket, free of charge. So Prabhupada said every month he would go down to the docks, to the office of the Sindhya Steamship Company, and check, when's the next boat going back to India? And this, like every month for a good number of months. But then, there he was, okay, next boat is at a certain time. And somehow he got the idea, oh, well, it's not for a couple of weeks. Let me carry on. So Prabhupada carried on. If Prabhupada had arrived, say, 10 years later, 1955, then the society, American Western society in general, and American society specifically, was extremely different. Just completely different. Hippies were non-existent. Ginsberg mentioned here, he just died, oh, I don't know, a few years ago, not long ago. Ginsberg, he was already not exactly old, but probably 30s, maybe 40. He wasn't the hippie generation. 1967, hippie generation means like from 16 to 24. That's the hippie generation in 1967 we're in now. So he was not the hippie generation. He was the generation before. The hippies had a slogan, don't trust anyone over 30. Yeah, they had, that was one of their slogans. It really was. It was really a youth thing. Ginsberg was older, but at heart he was a hippie. He was from the previous phenomenon had been called the beatniks. The beatniks. And the beatniks were effectively hippies, actually. Yeah. And they were, you know, they had rejected society and into all sorts of drugs. But it was very small, very limited, and not taken seriously. So, if Prabhupada had arrived in 1955, when there were no hippies, there were only just a few beatniks here and there, and they were really like socially just completely marginalized. They were not taken seriously, and there were very few of them. And so, it's, I mean, just judging by this, that how Srila Prabhupada was sort of on the edge for some time, whether to go back or not, but he just sort of stuck at it. It wasn't like he just came and everything just started happening at all. But if it had been that time, 10 years earlier, where American society on the whole, and the youth particularly, were far more conservative, extremely, then probably he would have just gone back to India and that would have been that. And who knows what would have happened. So it was Krishna's special arrangement. Krishna knew. Well, already some devotees had come in the 1930s and tried to do something, but they couldn't do anything substantial at all. So, but Krishna knew, here now is my real devotee, the real preacher, the person who can really make an impact. So one way of looking at that hippie phenomenon is that the whole thing was Krishna's arrangement so that Krishna consciousness could really get a foothold in America and then in Europe and the other parts of the Western world, Australia and so on, which happened. It really happened in a big way. So it was Krishna's arrangement. And this Ginsberg, and have you heard of Ginsberg? Is he sort of a known person? That's the younger people. He was a hero. Of course, the Beatles got into it a little later, and they were just the ultimate heroes, completely. In a class of their own. But Ginsberg, at this point, he was a hero. He was very famous. And if you knew Ginsberg, was like, you know Ginsberg, wow, you must be cool. He was a big man. A really, well, quite a big man, put it that way. Like a leader amongst the hippies. So, the situation, the cultural, social environment was such that, you know, Hare Krishna program, wow, cool, let's go. Yeah. And people would come and take part. Oh, mantra meditation, yeah. One at Sachinandan Swami, actually one of our leading devotees in Europe, in Germany, he was telling me, just maybe a couple of years ago, that he was at, the devotees were at like one of these big outdoor youth pop festivals in Germany, just like that a couple of years ago, or two, three, 4 years ago at the most. And who was there? You know, there are thousands and thousands of people there. I don't know, maybe 50,000 people. And who should he bump into but the keyboard player from The Doors? You heard of The Doors?
Yeah.
Really? Well, they ceased to exist by, you know, like, what was it? 1970, I think. So they were talking, and Satchinanda Maharaj didn't even know that this is who he is. He thought, this is just some guy, some musician guy who's involved in this festival. But then it turned out that he was one of the Doors. And the Doors, in those days at least, They were not the Beatles by any means, but they were very, very big. And so they're talking, and Satchidananda Maharaj asked them, so, you know, did you get into meditation And that fellow said, "Oh yeah, we would meditate every day." And Jim Morrison, who was the leader, you know, he died unfortunately, died young. But the man said, "Yeah, oh Jim, he would meditate every day. He'd chant Hare Krishna every day." Yeah. So, you know, these are the biggest people. And when I joined, which was January, actually it was 39 years ago today, wow. January the 7th, 1973. And that's a fact. There was one devotee, his name was Jai Hari. His service was to simply move around visiting these people. Yeah, that was what he did. Just move around visiting these people. I had, the very night before, I joined on the Sunday morning. I walked in with my bags Sunday morning. The very night before, the Saturday night, I had been meant to go to an Eric Clapton concert at the Rainbow Theatre. It's still a famous venue in Finsbury Park in North London. But I'd been visiting the temple and I met this devotee, Jai Hari. And he said, oh, yeah. So Eric Clapton was playing. And Jai Hari said, "Oh, you don't want to go to that." Because I was joining the temple the next day. He said, "No, look, I know Eric Clapton. Give me a ticket, I'll go." So I did. And he went with my brother and one other person who became a devotee later. Amita, you know Amita? Yeah. And they went to the Eric Clapton concert. And at the end, he went behind, they allowed him behind the stage, and he went and met Eric Clapton. Well, he knew Eric Clapton. He already knew Eric Clapton, who's another, you know, superstar. Even in those days, Eric Clapton was just a major superstar. And he went behind the stage, and Eric Clapton saw him and came running over and embraced him. And said, "Wow, I'm just so happy to see you. Wow." And then he would go visit the Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger. He knew Mick Jagger quite well. And Mick Jagger had beads, his Jaffa beads and his bead bag. And they would sit together. And Mick Jagger would smoke marijuana and chant Hare Krishna and offer this devotee the marijuana. And the devotee would smoke the marijuana. And I'm sorry to say he didn't remain a devotee long. Yeah, he just, yeah. But he knew all these people. Steve Winwood, I think, is another one. I don't know if you heard of him. But in those days, no, these are very big people. Really, really big people. But they were very interested in Krishna consciousness, and some of them were practicing. They're actually practicing, chanting every day on beads. So, it was into that type of social environment that Prabhupada arrived. It was, you could say, as ripe as it could be, you know. I mean, being the Western world and the capital of confusion and mental speculation and illicit activities, etc., etc., the social environment was as ready as it could possibly be for Krishna consciousness to come in and really take root, which is what happened. And thousands of people became devotees. Prabhupada initiated more than 5,000 disciples. At least 90%, if not 99%. Oh, I'd say at least 90, at least 95 with a piece. To one degree or another, with hippies. You know, there were a few who were like regular people, but they were in an extreme minority. An extreme minority. So, yeah, and this is just in a period I joined January the 7th, 1973. And already there were thousands of devotees and many temples. And the Krishna consciousness movement, you know, coming, not exactly, that was exactly like a classic hippie, but, you know, more or less from that sort of social background. Hare Krishna was just, you know, part of the scene. Sure, Hare Krishna, right. It wasn't like, oh, Hare Krishna, well, I don't know. It really wasn't like that at all. You know, as this hippie society became more degraded through the influence because they are just so dedicated to taking drugs. Just so dedicated. So as they got into hard drugs, the whole thing fell to pieces completely. Totally fell to pieces. So like this. And San Francisco was the capital of the world hippie movement. Haight-Ashbury was a suburb. It was actually the intersection of two streets, Haight Street and Ashbury. And that was the capital of the hippie movement. And here is Prabhupada now, just arriving in the middle of it. And I think they're going to organize the mantra rock dance. I don't know if we'll get there. Yeah, okay, let's just keep reading for a little while. Right. At the baggage claim, Srila Prabhupada waited for a moment, his eyes taking in everyone around him. Lifting his open palms, he beckoned everyone to chant louder, and the group burst into renewed chanting, with Prabhupada standing in their midst, softly clapping his hands and singing Hare Krishna. Gracefully, he then raised his arms above his head and began to dance, stepping and swaying from side to side. To the mixed chagrin, amusement, and irresistible joy of the airport workers and passengers, the reception party stayed with Prabhupada until he got his luggage. Then they escorted him outside into the sunlight and into a waiting car, a black 1949 Cadillac Fleetwood. Prabhupada got into the back seat with Mukunda and Allen Ginsberg. Until the moment the car pulled away from the curb, Srila Prabhupada, still smiling, continued handing flowers to all those who had come to welcome him as he brought Krishna consciousness west. The Cadillac belonged to Harvey Cohen, who almost a year before had allowed Prabhupada to stay in his Bowery loft. Harvey was driving, but because of his chauffeur's hat, picked up at a Salvation Army store, and his black suit and his beard, Prabhupada didn't recognize him. "Where's Harvey?" Prabhupada said. "He's driving," Mukunda said. "Oh, is that you? I didn't recognize you." Harvey smiled. "Welcome to San Francisco, Swamiji." Srila Prabhupada was happy to be in another big western city on behalf of his spiritual master Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Lord Chaitanya. "The further west one goes," Lord Chaitanya had said, "the more materialistic the people." Yet Lord Chaitanya had also said that Krishna consciousness should spread all over the world. Prabhupada's godbrothers had often wondered about Lord Chaitanya's statement that one day the name of Krishna would be sung in every town and village. Perhaps that verse should be taken symbolically, they said. Otherwise, what could it mean? Krishna in every town? But Srila Prabhupada had deep faith in that statement by Lord Chaitanya and in the instruction of his spiritual master. Here he was in the far western city of San Francisco, and already people were chanting. They had enthusiastically received him with flowers and kirtan. And all over the world there were other cities much like this one. The temple Mukunda and his friends had obtained was on Frederick Street in the Haight-Ashbury district. Like the temple at 26 Second Avenue in New York, it was a small storefront with a display window facing the street. A sign over the window read, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Temple. Mukunda and his friends had also rented a three-room apartment for Swamiji on the third floor of the adjoining building. It was a small, bare, run-down apartment facing the street. Followed by several carloads of devotees and curious seekers, Srila Prabhupada arrived at 518 Frederick Street and entered the storefront, which was decorated only by a few Madras cloths on the wall. Taking a seat on a cushion, he led a kirtan and then spoke, inviting everyone to take up Krishna consciousness. After his lecture, he left the storefront and walked next door and up the two flights of stairs to his apartment. As he entered his apartment, number 32, he was followed not only by his devotee and admirers, but also by reporters from San Francisco's main newspapers, the Chronicle and the Examiner. While some devotees cooked his lunch and Ranshaw unpacked his suitcase, Swamiji talked with the reporters who sat on the floor, taking notes on their pads. Reporter, downstairs you said you were inviting everyone to Krishna consciousness. Does that include the Haight-Ashbury bohemians and beatniks? Prabhupada, yes, everyone, including you or anybody else, be he or she what is called an acid head or a hippie or something else. But once he's accepted for training, he becomes something else from what he had been before. What does one have to, a reporter, what does one have to do to become a member of your movement? Prabhupada, there are four prerequisites. I do not allow my students to keep girlfriends. I prohibit all kinds of intoxicants, including coffee, tea, and cigarettes. I prohibit meat eating, and I prohibit my students from taking part in gambling. Reporter, do these... Shishinatai Madhava Chandra Ki.
God.
Reporter, do these so-called commandments extend to the use of LSD, marijuana, and other intoxicants? Prabhupada, I consider LSD to be an intoxicant. I do not allow any of my students to use that or any intoxicant. I train my students to rise early in the morning, to take a bath early in the day, and to attend prayer meetings three times a day. Our sect is one of austerity. It is the science of God. Although Prabhupada had found that reporters generally did not report his philosophy, he took the opportunity to preach Krishna consciousness. Even if the reporters didn't want to delve into the philosophy, his followers did. The big mistake of modern civilization, Srila Prabhupada continued, is to encroach upon others' property as though it were one's own. This creates an unnatural disturbance. God is the ultimate proprietor of everything in the universe. When people know that God is the ultimate proprietor, the best friend of all living entities, and the object of all offerings and sacrifices, then there'll be peace. The reporters asked him about his background, and he told briefly about his coming from India and beginning in New York. After the reporters left, Prabhupada continued speaking to the young people in his room. Mukunda, who had allowed his hair and beard to grow, but who wore around his neck the strand of large red beads Swamiji had given him at initiation, introduced some of his friends and explained that they were all living together and that they wanted to help Swamiji present Krishna consciousness to the young people of San Francisco. Mukunda's wife Janaki asked Swamiji about his plane ride. He said it had been pleasant except for some pressure in his ears. The houses looked like matchboxes, he said. And with his thumb and forefinger, he indicated the size of a matchbox. He leaned back against the wall and took off the garlands he had received that day, until only a beaded necklace, a common, inexpensive item with a small bell on it, remained hanging around his neck. Prabhupada held it, inspected the workmanship, and toyed with it. "This is special," he said, looking up, "because it was made with devotion." He continued to pay attention to the necklace, as if receiving it had been one of the most important events of the day. When his lunch arrived, he distributed some to everyone, and then Ranshaw efficiently, though tactlessly, asked everyone to leave and give the Swami a little time to eat and rest. Outside the apartment and in the storefront below, the talk was of Swamiji. No one had been disappointed. Everything Mukunda had been telling them about him was true. They particularly enjoyed how he had talked about seeing everything from Krishna's viewpoint. Hare Krishna. So from there it developed. Talk of the mantra rock dance. Anyway, you'll read next week and so on about how things developed there. What happened was Shamsunda, well, here is Sam, it's not initiated yet. Shamsunda knew some of the leading hippies. And through the leading hippies, he met, oh, I should look up the names. One person he met was Sunny Bhaja. You heard of Sunny Bhaja? Not so well known. He's the founder of Hell's Angels. Yeah. He met Sunny Bhaja. And because the Hell's Angels, it was all just part of the scene. And he met, I forget the name, but one of the big, I think it was the manager of the Grateful Dead. And Grateful Dead, they were also very, very big. So then, when Shamsunda, Mukunda, and the Roger Seagull became Gurudas, when they and their wives went to London next year, 68, there they were trying to do something, and through, then Sunny Bhaja came to establish Hell's Angels in England, and the manager of the Grateful Dead came, and he knew the Beatles, and Shamsunda knew him. So Shamsunda, it wasn't so easy, but he managed to sneak in to a press conference of the Beatles, and he was just sitting there waiting. Everyone was waiting. And George Harrison walked through. And George Harrison saw him. And George Harrison just stopped and walked over and said, "Wow, Where have you guys been? I've been waiting for a long time to meet you guys. Because he had seen the devotees in San Francisco. He got a copy of the Hare Krishna Happening record in San Francisco. And he'd seen the devotees chanting in the streets in London. And he had already been involved with transcendental meditation. He was very, very interested in these things. Yeah, and then Hare Krishna. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.